Old Dandelion Festival at the Churchtown Dairy, April 30th, on the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org, where you can list your own events that'll be
one, two, three, four, five, six.
This is Grand Finale, co-host of the Drive Time Radio Show, and you are listening to WGXC Agra, 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
You can get high with the radio on Wednesday, April 20th on 90.7 FM, including at 11 a.m. Mayuka Fujino is live in the WGXC Acre studio with Mirage Station. Then at noon, after the local news, it's time for Driftless Turmoil, this week with tracks from Clipping, Drone Operator, and Jason Krumer. At 2 p.m. on Rock and Roll Radio, tune in Chick Chick Chick, ZZ Top, and Secret Machines, among others. Then the Hudson Valley Congressional Report is featured at 4 p.m. on the radio on the WGXC afternoon show live from Acre. Then at 7 p.m. we're live from New York City with the Off the Hook show, simulcast from WBAI, featuring the Hacker Quarterly 2600 and their technology talk until 8 p.m. when it's time for Rock and Roll High School with Anya Kanovskaya this week. And at 10 p.m. we're live with Snack Point Charlie, Jeff Economy show out of Ulster County. And at midnight we have another 2 hours of live music from Ulster County with Peter Aaron's Go Go Kitty show, simulcast on Radio Kingston and also on 90.7 FM WGXC until 2 a.m.
WGXC underwriting support has been provided by Dedicated Presentation Solutions. Allow DPS to turn your audiovisual how-do-eyes into here's-how-you-cans. Visit dedicatedpresentation.com or call 845-475-8465 for more information. Dedicated Presentation Solutions, your audiovisual partner.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Blanche Mackey Photography of Craryville, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
Good evening and welcome. You are tuned in to 90.7 FM, and I am Kimberly Y. Irwin, the host of Race Talks on WGXC, where for the next hour, we will have the very necessary conversation on race and ethnicity. And why do we talk about race? To combat racism. Education is key and discussion a must. The bottom line is here is where we keep it rear. Here is where we keep it real on Race Talks, where
no topic is taboo.
And that voice, my friend, is of my guest, Stephanie Monsieur. That's a Belgian last name for those of you who are interested. M-O-N-S-E-U. You'll be looking her up for sure. Towards the end of the show, she will give you her contact information and let you know what wonderful events are coming up that you can take part in. And I would like to say to my listeners who have been listening for a while, I'm actually including a special segment called, well, what did I name it? Oh, yes, called Actions, Right Actions, because I do think it's important that we just don't talk, that we do. And so I want to give you some suggestions on what you can do to overcome any stigmas or any feelings that you are not getting out there in different cultural avenues. There's so many things going on in our communities, Greene and Columbia counties and the environs, that literally, like, you can have a staycation right here. You can visit everything intercultural right here where we live and work. So I'm going to start my first topic. We're going to have an excellent show, like I mentioned, the guest who I have on today. But the talk topic actually is informed by my guest. It's called Racial Acrobatics. And this is not just a talk topic. This is actually also a talk term, which is one of our segments usually. And I think I should start with saying that the talk term would be described as, or racial acrobatics would be described as, actions or procedures characterized by considerable flair or mental agility with respect to one's racial, or more specifically and correctly, as I like to deem it, ethnic designation. There's only one race, the human race. Mm-hmm. So I like to really preface when I say race or anything racial, I'm really talking about ethnicity and ethnic identity and cultural differences, because there's only one race, the human one. Mm-hmm. And when I looked up racial acrobatics, you know, I Googled it. and as an English teacher, one would say you shouldn't use Google. You should go right to the dictionaries or something like that. But there's dictionaries on Google. So I Googled it, and not one dictionary came up with racial acrobatics. So I'm not sure, Stephanie, I'm thinking I'm coining the term right now.
I think you did. I love it also.
And again, that's because of you. And we're going to get into who you are and exactly how you're actually informing that. But so that's my definition of racial acrobatics. And people literally bend over backwards to try not to be seen as racist, or people who are of different ethnicities or darker skin tones, they are thought of as not being able to be racist, but that's not true. So that's another type of wording that people of color, that's the term you like to use, indigenous people, we seem to feel that that's not something that we can be labeled as. And sometimes we bend over backwards to try not to be seen as the identity that we are. One of the terms that we have talked about in the past is called passing. And so people sometimes bend over backwards, do racial acrobatics to be seen as not of one of their ethnic backgrounds. So with that in mind, I will talk first. And this is something that I definitely want to speak more about later in the show. In fact, there's going to be a few highlights that include a YouTube video, which you'll be listening to, of the U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, some words that she can share with you in her own, from her own mouth, so you can actually hear, if you haven't already been able to, if you haven't been in the U.S., I don't know, if you haven't looked in on YouTube, or if you haven't seen any news shows, the U.S. Supreme Court Justice just this month has been voted in, and this is an African-American woman named Ketanji Brown Jackson. And I have to say, I actually, yes, we're going to do a silent applause here, because I think what's so wonderful, I love, maybe I should just introduce you, because maybe we should talk about it before, actually, because we're like very animated here. I want to say in the studio, in the online studio, right? But I want to say, I love that it's Ketanji Brown Jackson. One, it's not just because she's African-American, and of course, it's always wonderful that we have women represented and that we have people who are of different ethnic backgrounds represented. So we still have a long ways to go with that one, but we're getting closer there, and that's why it's so wonderful. But her name, Ketanji, I would love to ask her if it means anything specific. And her last two names, Brown and Jackson, which one would say is typically African-American, right? Like from around the way. So having this name really makes her stand out for an identity that's African-American. And so it's like Barack Obama, one would say, you know, the name leads with him being of African descent from Africa on his father's side. But So instead of going right into Ketanji Brown Jackson and her voice, let's hear from my guest, Stephanie Monceau. And I'm just going to share a few things about her and then ask her afterwards to, you know, clarify if I say something that's not exactly right, clarify, and then just please add to this wonderful bio. So without further ado, I'm going to read it actually, because I think I wrote some of the snippets that I thought were most informative. Stephanie Monceau is a New York City born Queens and Brooklyn artist who became rooted to Hudson in 2005. She claims she's an art school dropout, but she's no dropout when it comes to being a leader in the community. And that's how I actually ended up meeting her. She's a member of the Hudson Rotary Club, and she was at a social justice and equity meeting that they had, which I was invited to by Elena Mosley. Of course, all you know her, she's been on my show, and she's the head of Operation Unite New York. And so these two women are definitely renowned in the community, and so pleased, and I'm so pleased to have them on my show. So of course, like I said, she's very stand up, and she's the co-founder of Bindle Stiff Family Circus. And it is through this creation that she created Bindle Stiff Circus After School, which offers youth ages 8 to 18 in Hudson and Chatham, New York, a free place to learn how to express themselves creatively. As its program director, Monceau engages the youth in body movement and collaborates with other organizations who provides services to the youth, like one I just mentioned. Most empowering is that for Black, queer, non-binary, Indigenous folk, and people of color. That's something I got from Bindle Stiff's website about us, so definitely go look that up. Nearly a decade ago, she began a healing journey, which is why I absolutely wanted her on so she can share this with us. It started with a physical manifestation that ended up being rooted in spirit, behavior, culture, and thought. Her growing awareness led her to work on understanding her own identity, her relation to others, and that of her, quote, privilege and position, end quote. Stephanie reveals that this, in her own words, this learning is changing how I show up as a teacher, artist, community member, family member, and partner. She adds that she's not done changing, and I'm ever reminded, she says, that I have more growing to do. Well, I think you have grown so much, you can share a lot of that growth with us right now. Please welcome again the voice of Stephanie Monceau. Yay!
Thank you, Kimberly. Yeah, silent applause. That's the only ASL I know. I really want to learn sign language.
I know Happy Birthday, and my cousin teaches it.
Oh, cool. Okay. I'll get that contact from you.
Oh, and can I just say, shout out to my sister who is not well right now, Christine Irwin. I just want to let her know I love her.
Prayers for you.
Thank you. You're healing. Okay. So share with us a little bit about yourself. Clarify anything I may have gotten wrong, and give us the good stuff.
First of all, I love the topic, racial acrobatics. I am a circus person, but I am not an acrobat. I do not walk on my hands. I do not flip front or back without a trampoline and a safety belt. And so I am not showing up here as an expert in anything. I just want to make that really clear. But I love what you said, you know, I love what comes to mind with the term racial acrobatics, because What I do know from my training in the circus world, and I do go up in the air as an aerialist, is that if you don't push yourself every day, if you don't keep stretching every day, if you don't keep building up your muscle and your strength every day, if you don't work through the discomfort every single day, if you don't consider yourself a learner every single day, you are not at the top of your game and you're going to lose everything that you think you have. And so to me, that feels very relevant to the discussion, the ongoing discussion and the ongoing learning about, like, who am I? Who am I in relation to you? Who am I in relation to my neighbor across the street, to the rest of this community, to the bigger world? Always having to practice.
I like that you said discomfort. If you're not doing this, it's discomfort. I'm of a certain age right now, and I don't mind people knowing that I made it 52. And I think and I was just thinking about it today, it wasn't until I was about 49 that I stopped being able to do things that I could do. I was a dancer. Gene Villers Dance Studio, holler. Shout out to Gene Villers and all the, and I'm going to shout out to Roz too, because I know that some of the people went to her dance studio too. And so I was a dancer since I was 8. I just saw some trophies that I had. And I was looking at that and I said, wow, you know, right now, if I don't work out and stretch my muscles, I'm feeling a lot of discomfort. And when I do, I'm not feeling really well because it takes so long to for my body to heal from the exercise. So I like that. We have to just keep going through it regardless of being discomforted. And of course, for some people, obviously not for me or you, talking about race is not a comfortable topic. And I actually want to, and thank you for being on again, to help change that. I don't think it needs to be a difficult conversation.
I grew up with, you know, I'm a first generation American. I grew up with from an immigrant family. I heard more than English being spoken around me. But one thing that all of my cousins and all of the people in my family did learn really fast when they got here was, like, we don't talk about Black people. You know, they would literally drop their voice to a whisper to say Black people. And I always wondered, like, what is that? Why do we do that? Why is it? And, you know, when I think back about my growing up in Queens, the neighborhood was fairly diverse, but pretty majority, like, you know, white European descended folks. And my school was the same. And then my family moved us upstate and it was the same. And I think just like the way people sort of pocket, well, the way people of European descent sort of like pocket themselves together. And there's a lot of reasons why that happens. We know about redlining. We know about, like, people being denied mortgages. We know why neighborhoods are kept the way they are. But it really robs people of a chance to get to know each other and become comfortable together and, like, learn each other's culture and learn each other's food and music and traditions. And yeah, to me, it feels like a real loss. And so the idea of racial acrobatics is, again, so compelling because, like you said, you bend over backwards. But I also think about turning myself inside out because that lack of contact, that lack of connection with other cultures makes this emptiness. And speaking as somebody who is first generation, I also saw that my family wanted to drop a lot of their original culture and adopt what was American, which is basically just brand names. So, like, they wanted to wear Levi's and they wanted to eat McDonald's and they wanted to drink Coca-Cola and they wanted to listen to, like, pop music on the radio. And there was, all of those things are just things on the outside. There's nothing culturally enriching about any of that stuff that they bought into as immigrants. And again, there's that emptiness. Like, you have to turn yourself inside out to find like who you really are. And that's what I think of when I think about racial acrobatics. It's like trying to fill that empty void.
Well, you know, there's a term, and you mentioned you look at privilege. There's a term, white privilege. Mm-hmm. When you use that term, would you were thinking of that specifically, or privilege in a different sense? Because like you just mentioned, you are first generation American, and being a first generation American brings with it some other ideas of who you are, as opposed to if your grandparents came up, well, great-grandparents came over on the Mayflower, right? Mm-hmm. So people look differently on more recent immigrants and people who have come and made America their home, as opposed to those who, you know, maybe before it became America.
I still feel that we walked into a position, whoever got off the boat walked in here as white-skinned Europeans, and so were immediately and easily able to assimilate into the mainstream of, you know, privilege. In the post-World War II years, I don't know how it works now, but in the years after World War II, just at the end of World War II, there were so many immigrants coming from Eastern Europe, and you had to have a sponsor to come over. And, you know, people would kind of like vouch for you and say, yes, I'll help them get a job. Yes, I'll help them find a home, so that, you know, you could kind of slide into the fabric of American culture. And for a family of Eastern Europeans with this color skin, that was easy. And now we look at what's happening with, you know, folks trying to flee from Yemen or Afghanistan, or, you know, what's happening in Rwanda or with the Tigray population in Ethiopia, like people trying to cross the Mediterranean on rowboats to get into Europe. It's not the same. So yeah, I feel like I have privilege because of this ethnicity and this skin tone that I have.
Yes, and I want everyone to know you're pointing to your hand, so it's white skin tone, lighter than the lighter skin tone. Mm-hmm. Well, that makes me think of what a few people have been discussing recently because of the war in Ukraine, and support for me to those in Ukraine, and hopefully they fight well and win. That there was some commotion and discussion around the fact that the large population was trying to flee on transportation, and that they had taped certain people with darkened skin tone, possibly from Africa, some of the African continent, one of the countries in West Africa, possibly, whereas they were told they couldn't get on. They were stopped, and these were like doctors who came there to help, you know, people of professions that were invited to Ukraine.
And students, I think, as well.
Oh, and students too. Yeah. Okay. And that they were asked to wait. Yep. For those who were possibly Ukrainian, but certainly for those who with a lighter skin tone, like you said. So their skin color, the tone of their skin, represented a different ethnicity, a different nationality, and therefore were made to wait. Mm-hmm. And this was a huge conversation in the African American community. And I remember thinking that I didn't live in Eastern Europe, but I visited, and I had family, friends who, and stayed with their family. And I didn't experience that when I was and it was in Poland, not quite Ukraine, but that's where a lot of Ukrainians are going, to their neighboring country. So I just wanted people to know that, like in America, just one person or a group of people does not the entire country make. So that one or two people, like you know, what they say with a police force or something like that usually makes it bad for everyone else, you know, a bad apple. But so I wanted to bring that up. And also because we have a hometown person, Malcolm Nance, who is actually in the Ukraine. He volunteered to go and fight to help the Ukrainians. So, wow. And if no one knows Malcolm Nance from MSNBC, where he works, he took a leave of absence from there to go and do that. He's a neighbor. He's been on a show of mine that I had hosted with Randall Martin on WJXC earlier in the year, last year, the afternoon show. But he's a wonderful person with very dark skin tone, much darker than others you will find in the Ukraine. So again, so you know, we just want to again shout out that we would like to have everyone enjoy a free, a place where they can have free elections, and hopefully we can here too.
Well, there's another topic.
Well, we're going to get into Ketanji Brown Jackson right really quickly. I just wanted to know if there's anything else you want to say about yourself. We're going to talk more. We're going to allow you later to give out your contact information and events. But anything right now before we go into our next segment that you want to share about yourself and your endeavors?
I feel like approaching, I think the idea of like walking through discomfort is really important. And again, because I come from a physical training background, I understand that discomfort leads to growth, and having conversations that are uncomfortable also leads to growth. And I feel like some of us, you know, like that you got to want to do the work. Like each person individually has to want to do the work of growth and change. And that has to mean like a little self-reflection, a little humility, and then owning like, okay, I see my part here. What do I need to do differently? And how can I learn? And it's not about like self-flagellating and beating yourself. I'm the worst human in the world. Like that kind of self-shaming is actually the opposite of what's helpful in any kind of growth. So I don't know, letting go of perfectionism and being willing to be uncomfortable and like asking how to do it better is just something that really rings true for me as true in being like a circus artist and true in being a better community member.
Well, actually, that leads me to a question I didn't ask you, and I want to make sure we get there. You work with young people. Mm-hmm. So I saw that you work with young people of different ethnicities. Can you share a little bit about what their ethnic backgrounds are and their makeup? And
well, most of my teaching is done here in Columbia County in the Hudson City School District. So there are folks who are coming from Central and South American families. There are folks who are coming from the South Asian diaspora, Bangladeshi community. There are folks who are African American. There are folks who are Caribbean. There are folks who are like Latin Caribbean. There's just like, and then there are folks of all different kinds of European backgrounds as well, and some Asian folks as well. So
you have the rainbow.
Yeah, it is a rainbow. And the folks that I teach with, I mean, we're a really small crew, but we also represent a little bit of a rainbow as well. And
wonderful.
I feel like that's like, because of where I'm standing, because of my positionality, I feel like I want to do a lot more learning about things like culturally relevant teaching and cultural humility, educating myself about what whiteness is and how to like not get defensive and how to become curious about the feelings that I have when I'm uncomfortable or if I say the wrong thing or feel like I don't understand what's, you know, what's happening around me. There's been a lot of times over these past 17 years where I've been one of two European descended folks in a building full of people of different ethnicities than mine. And that's a good position to be in, actually. It like decenters my identity for me and reminds me that I'm just kind of like a small part of a bigger world.
Well, again, you mentioned something that I want to clarify for the listeners. What is whiteness, right? What is whiteness? And there's a term, there's a definition in which it says that it's the construction of the white race. Those are used terms, white culture, and the system of privileges and advantages afforded to white people in the United States. And I brought up whiteness because I just found that there's another term. Well, of course, the opposite of whiteness then is blackness, of course. And people sometimes write that with a capital B and a capital W. There's another term, mixedness, now. Hmm. And if you were to Google mixedness, because I did, you wouldn't get that it actually refers to, being an example of an ethnicity. So that term has yet to fully find itself within the curriculum of race and ethnic studies. But a person wrote on a Colombian in South America, the Colombia ethnic group, and they use the term in their academic studies as mixedness. Huh. Someone mentioned to me recently, a librarian, or he's studying to be a librarian, but he's a teacher at the school here, that I know about the terminology BIYOC. And I said, BIPOC? And he said, no, BIYOC. And I didn't understand what he was talking about. So then he shows me Black Indigenous Youth of Color. BIPOC is Black Indigenous People of Color. And so I said, I had no idea that term existed. So I'm not here on Race Talks as the knowledge broker. As a knowledge broker, not as a person who has all the answers either. But I'm certainly bringing them up and having a discussion about it. And so thank you for sharing your words that brought us all this information that I can Google. And everyone else can too. Mixedness, M-I-X-E-D-N-E-S-S. And now that's with a capital M too.
I just Googled it. okay. Thank you.
So I'm going to now share with you, like I mentioned, Judge Ketanji, U.S. Supreme Court Justice, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, her own words. I'm sharing right now what she says about people who have gone before her, because of course we don't do things in a vacuum. And if it wasn't for those who've gone before us, we wouldn't be, of course.
Ever buoyed by the leadership of generations past who helped to light the way, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Justice Thurgood Marshall, and my personal heroine, Judge Constance Baker Motley. They and so many others did the heavy lifting that made this day possible. And for all of the talk of this historic nomination and now confirmation, I think of them as the true pathbreakers. I am just the very lucky first inheritor of the dream of liberty and justice for all. To be sure, I have worked hard to get to this point in my career, and I have now achieved something far beyond anything my grandparents could have possibly ever imagined. But no one does this on their own. The path was cleared for me so that I might rise to this occasion. And in the poetic words of Dr. Maya Angelou, I do so now while bringing the gifts my ancestors gave. I am the dream and the hope of the slave. So as I take on this new role, I strongly believe that this is a moment in which all Americans can take great pride. We have come a long way toward perfecting our union. In my family, it took just one generation to go from segregation to the Supreme Court of the United States. And it is an honor, the honor of a lifetime, for me to have this chance to join the court, to promote the rule of law at the highest level, and to do my part to carry our shared project of democracy and equal justice under law forward into the future. Thank you again, Mr. President, and members of the Senate, for this incredible honor.
Wow.
I'm going to clap out loud.
Oh, yes. I so wish I was there.
Yeah, it's such a historic moment.
Well, I just wanted to say a few of the words that she mentioned, because how knowledgeable, I mean, you know, what's the word where you... the terminology where you know omniscient? Yeah.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Because you talked about how you were one generation, first generation American.
Mm-hmm.
And she said that her family, she was one generation removed in her family to being a Supreme Court judge. So that, to me, when people ask or when people state or when I read or hear it being spoken that nothing's changed in America regarding race and ethnicity and how people look at race and racism, I know that there's a change. Justice Brown Jackson mentioned Maya Angelou repeated some of her words. So I'm going to let that stand as one of my segments, Word of Wisdom. She mentioned that, you know, one came from slaves to the Supreme Court justice. You tell me that we haven't made any changes. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I wouldn't say we're over the mountaintop, as Martin Luther King Jr. Had stated in one of his words that people continue to quote. But we are certainly closer to that mountaintop. I believe so. What are some of the takeaways that did you get from hearing her speak those words?
I also was thinking about how she has been a public defender. She's not a corporate lawyer. She's not, you know, suing people for tons of money as a litigator. She's a public defender. She spent her career advocating for people who are being prosecuted by the state. And as we know, the folks who, there's a disparity in who gets picked up for a taillight out or who gets, you know, busted for buying a bag of weed or who gets sentenced for, you know, the list goes on and on about the offenses that kind of tend to corral people of color into the justice system.
Right, that system from school to prison.
Right.
The pipeline for mass, you know, that is discussed in around the understanding of mass incarceration in America for those people of color. Absolutely. So her history, but during the I wanted to call the trial. Definitely, right? It was mentioned that that was almost not a good thing because she, you know, came from Harvard, you know, a Harvard Law School grad, graduating pretty much at, or doing amazing feats that any person at the Harvard Law School being, I think President Obama was also part of the law review there. So that's one of the things that really distinguishes you as a student of law at Harvard Law School. And she was distinguished in that way too. So she could have had her pick of anything and to then find herself doing what she felt was her calling. And that was to give back to community. And then to be at the confirmation really badgered about doing these, you know, having this type of background where she is most knowledgeable about the people that she's sentencing and understanding. Them, like very few others that would be a corporate law would have. So that is extremely interesting. I want to make sure that people also understand, not that usually it's important, but this is Race Talks, that she did not marry a person of a darker skin tone, but one that would be categorized as a European American. And that never comes up, which is also a sign that we are closer to the top of the mountain. Because that would definitely, well, that would have been against the law, right?
Yeah, not too long ago.
I forget what the name of that case was.
Loving versus the state of Virginia.
Yes, that's it. So yeah, there's a lot of ways we can point to coming a long way. And as you mentioned, the mass incarceration, prison to pipeline, the redlining, which I actually was a victim of when I was trying to get an apartment in Long Island. So I don't think that was a question. Oh, we're getting very close to the kind of close of our talk today. So I definitely want to do one last segment with you, which is called DYK, or Do You Know? And this is not something I use to stump my guest with, but because I also like to say we keep it real, I don't like to prepare you in advance for it. So let's just have a real quick conversation on, and when I say, do you know, it's usually because I didn't know.
Okay.
So I looked it up. No other first U.S. Supreme Court justices. So do you have any idea of any of the firsts?
Wasn't Sandra Day O'Connor the first female?
Yes. Yep.
And was Justice Thurgood Marshall the first African American person?
Yes. You're awesome.
I'm a history nerd.
Asian American? Oh, I don't think she's Asian. Latin American. I wrote Asian American, but she's Latin American.
She's Latinx.
Yeah,
Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Yes. And I think, did we have one that was Jewish?
Yes. Well, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was Jewish. I don't know who the first one was, but...
First woman, Jewish person.
First female, yeah.
Right. Yeah. So I think you've got them all. Yay.
We need some more firsts.
And there's only, and this is another I didn't know, but four women ever.
Wow. That's bananas.
Yeah. Wow. Right.
And so it's in the 20th century. It's like from the 1980s, right? That's when Sandra Day O'Connor made it in the 80s.
Yep.
Come on.
Exactly.
Come on now.
But I want to like it to, when we talk about race and gender, the idea that one would never say that women didn't come a long way. I mean, I was born in 1970, and I remember being told that I shouldn't raise my hand. It was in grade school, like maybe first or second grade. I shouldn't raise my hand and ask to, you know, and answer a lot of questions. And I was told not to do that. I was told why, but I didn't understand it. So it just went like in one ear and obviously stayed in my head. And then I eventually learned that, you know, if I want to get a date and maybe possibly get married ever, I shouldn't be very intelligent or act like it and, you know, in public.
Wow.
So we have STEM for girls now. We don't do that.
We tell them to speak up, be seen, be heard.
Exactly. So there was a change from the 70s, right? The bra burnings helped. And for sure, that's what Justice Ketanji Brown, gosh, she has three names, Ketanji Brown Jackson was saying when she said, you know, we stand on the shoulders of our forefathers. I don't think I quoted her verbatim, but that's what the idea was within the ethnic grouping and certainly within gender also. So
the gender thing is like, you know, there's this whole thing about white femininity, though, and white feminism that is not helpful in like uplifting everybody.
Yes.
Because white feminism is still so strongly attached to that kind of like male female binary that. You know, like white women have this supposed like traditionally protected status in white society, and there's a lot of, I feel like, I don't know if you've ever tried to learn a new skill, but like whenever I try to learn something new, I practice and then I hit this plateau and I feel like, all right, I'm stuck, I have to try something different. And then I try something different and it slides me back a little bit, but then I can keep growing again. And I feel like white feminism and white female identity has to slide back a bit. Like we have to let go of some of this like quote unquote privilege and like specialness that we've sort of come to rest on. This it's entitlement. We have to let go of that and slide back, and it's going to hurt. And then we can keep growing forward.
You're perfect guest, because that's the perfect segue into the understanding that there is a difference in how women treat each other based on, you know, exactly what you term the femininity. When you think of feminism, there's definitely a Black feminism that is different than, you know, white feminism, and that can, well, we can see that historically from the 1920s when, or even before then, during slavery, when women were trying to get the right to vote, and Black women were put in a position to where to go first. Should we support women's right to vote, or should we, you know, support the Black male men's right to vote? And wanting both privileges to vote and to be seen. But we knew that if women could vote, it wouldn't exactly mean that Black women could vote. So if we look to see if men could vote, Black men could vote, that would be great, but that also kept us back from being able to vote because we weren't men. So that conundrum is the building blocks of how going forward, the identity, the feminine identity, feminism in the shape of the political diaspora had been branched off somewhat. So as united as we have been, and Sojourner Truth was a type of uniter, I believe, in her words, we certainly had to part in certain venues too, because we were, and to some extent still are, being treated differently. I want to say that you mentioned that, and I wanted to bring up really quickly that Judge Brown Jackson's hearing was racially incensed. MSNBC reports that Ketanji Brown Jackson hearing, the GOP fixates on critical race theory. The New York Times had a headline saying, judging a judge on race and crime, the GOP plays to base and fringe. So when you play to base and fringe on race and crime, what that means is that you don't feel that a Black woman could be great in making rules and laws for all. Mm-hmm. And then the Daily Beast writes, the GOP staged a racist clown show at Ketanji Brown Jackson's SCOTUS hearing.
That gives us a really bad name. Us circus folks really hate that. Oh. Don't mix us up with that nonsense.
That's right. Not clown awful. Show should be like fun and funny, not awful and awful, right. You know, funny. But Marsha Jackson, was it Marsha? Oh God, don't say I said her name wrong. Is it Marsha? I just said Marsha Jackson. One of the people who was talking to her asked her about the term woman. And this is a...
Oh, that's right.
I want to say, God, I just lost her name. I'm so sorry. But her first name is Marsha. and it seemed like when people talk about it, Judge Brown Jackson couldn't define woman. And it wasn't that she couldn't define woman.
Right.
She chose not to.
Marsha
Blackburn.
Thank you. Yeah, right. Yeah.
She chose not to. But she didn't answer the question in a way that was acceptable, I think, when I heard it. And I felt when listening to people talk about it after the fact, that they read it right if they were seeing that it was a question that one wouldn't have asked a white woman.
No.
You know, a European American female.
Or a man. I really, so like all through the hearing, there was like this hashtag Ketanji sigh, you know, because just her demeanor, her excellence, her professionalism, she knows her stuff. You can't pull the rug out from under her with all those ridiculous questions they asked. She came straight back with like the letter of the law. She knows her stuff. People please. And so there was one article about that woman question that just like, she didn't have to answer the question because she was embodying what it means.
Thank you.
To be, yes. To hold that strength, to put up with that nonsense, to keep moving forward no matter what, to keep focused on what's true and what needs to really be the important part of the discussion. And to me, that is the element of, when I think about the amazing women that I know, the Black, white, Asian, whatever it is, that is the elemental character of woman.
Yes, perseverance. I actually have a Katy Perry song that I was trying to listen to a Katy Perry song. Well, I didn't want to cut you off, but I wanted to support you and I wanted to make sure that we get to having your final information sharing at the end. But a Katy Perry song I found when looking to hear, I'm a big fan of American Idol. And a person that sang one of her songs, and she says, oh God, you sing that song better than me. And I had never heard her even sing it. And so I went to look it up. And there was a Katy Perry song that came up that expounds on what it is to be a woman. And Katy Perry writes her own songs. So I thought that message was very interesting. And so I thought to go out the last minute or so with introducing that song. And I want to just say that it's because everyone can answer that. Every woman can and should answer that question for herself or whatever the pronoun would be. So with that understanding, I am going to start the close of the show by thanking again my guest, who's absolutely phenomenal today. So thank you so much again. She will share with you her contact information and some upcoming events. And I'm going to have her actually be our Right Acts segment host. So, because I know whatever event she's talking about, if you go, that would be in support of feeling good about who you are. Not, you don't have to do racial acrobats by just attending an event where you'll be around people who are other than you, ethnically, culturally, and support those who are doing great in the community in those respects too is awesome goal. So go ahead.
I'm really excited about this project that we're working on for the summer in partnership with the Hudson Youth Center and support of the mayor of the city of Hudson, Mr. Kamal Johnson. The Restorative Center is based in Newburgh, New York, and they are a grassroots restorative justice training organization. And their specialty is that they train youth, and they focus on youth of color in restorative practices to be able to hold important community conversations, kind of like you're doing, Kimberly. They really hope that in bringing people together to have conversations, we can form tighter bonds in our community and really become neighbors and community members. And that is the basis of being able to talk through and walk through the actions to get rid of racism and white supremacy. That is the basis of coming to a different understanding of what it means to restore balance, like when harm is done, instead of this punitive justice, you know, like punitive system we have, to restore the balance of like what it means for that economic push out is happening here and people are being forced to move away, like to restore the balance of what it means to be on stolen land. So like there's all these conversations that we need to have. And August 15th through 21st will be a week of restorative justice training specifically for youth and teens in the community. And then on that weekend, a whole bunch of community circles will be held and led by those youth so that we can start having these kinds of conversations in a safe way. And you can email me, stephanie@bindlestift.org, to find out more. We're going to be sending a press release out and invitation to the community.
Wonderful. And again, that's Right Acts. So if you attend or somehow supports that event, you will not have to do too much racial acrobats. Just show up. All right. Thank you so much. I want to end the show with Katy Perry's song, What Makes a Woman? These are her words. This video on YouTube, if anyone wants to look it up, it's actually she's always wearing something very interesting, but she's in a polka dot outfit and very pregnant. So she really represents being a woman also. I just want to end with know that Race Talks on WGXC 90.7 FM with your host, me, Kimberly Y. Irwin, is inviting you to continue to listen each month this summer. One of our guests will be the Hudson Mayor, Kamal Jackson and
Johnson.
Johnson, sorry, everyone's Jackson today. Yes, Marsha Jackson. Thank you. So Katy Jackson is here. You have 1 minute of her. Thank you to my guests. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Kimberly.
Enjoy, love, beauty, joy.
Is it the way I talk, sweet? The way my skin is soft, after how I can be a bitch and make you keep your fingers crossed. Is it the way that I praise you, the way that I please you, or how fast I change my mind and get scared that I might leave you? Could spend your whole life, but you could